such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey, welcome everyone. God bless you for tuning into The Winds of Change. This is Wednesday, so you get Father Tom Coyce here. Special Whoa. Welcome to the EWTN listeners.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Oh, it is. That means it's Brain Wrinkling Wednesday. God love you. We do need our brain wrinkled to keep us praying, because certainly if you don't know what to pray for, listen to The Winds of Change, and you'll have plenty to pray for. Pray for our own families, our own spiritual well-being, and especially, as I like to do on the Winds of Change, pray for the spiritual and moral health of our country, the United States, this country that God has blessed in so many ways, and yet we're in such a challenging time. There's so many forces. There is a conflict, some even call it a civil war going on, and we need to do it right. We need to apply great Christian charity, great Christian values, great Catholic truths. And to help us do that, we have again with us a wonderful man who's in the forefront of the culture wars, we'll call it, I guess, Mr. Michael Kenny from the Ave Maria University. Many of us know that wonderful institution. He's a lawyer and was dean of the law school. Am I right about that, Michael?
You just gave me a promotion, Father. I was the associate dean, but I like your promotion.
Oh, okay. Well, I will call them tomorrow.
Yeah. Very well.
Well, you're a man steeped in law books. That's what we can say.
Yes.
And I wanted to have you on again. And there's so many things that you bring to the table, so much knowledge and experience. You are newly working on a new project called Pro-Life Partnership.
Yep, Pro-Life Partners Foundation.
Pro-Life Partners Foundation to really help fuel and give financial support to so many of the organizations that are doing what they can, and it certainly has taken on a new import. You had a webinar right after the Dobbs decision came to overturn Roe versus Wade.
Can you tell us
about that?
Yes, thank you, Father, and thank you for having me as a guest on your show. I so admire the whole approach of the show. The webinar was planned to occur within 48 hours of the Supreme Court issuing the Dobbs decision. So that was a rather tall order. We're very grateful to Mr. David B. Wright. David B. Wright is a national pro-life leader who was one of the founders of 40 Days for Life over 20 years ago. And David has a particular skill set in conducting webinars that made all of this possible. So we partnered with David, and to our surprise, the decision came on Friday, the 24th, which it was a blessing in disguise, because we had planned for the webinar to be Wednesday, the 29th, anticipating that the decision would be released on Monday, the 27th. So we had a couple of extra days. In that time, we had over 40 national pro-life leaders, over 40 leaders. We gave them each 3 minutes to address the nation on what are our next steps in a post-Roe world. And, Father, we began the whole program with a seven-minute breakdown of the Dobbs decision by the lead attorney on the case who was behind the scenes. He wrote what's called the cert petition, which is the most important step when you're applying to the Supreme Court. You've got to convince the court to take the case, and that's a real long shot. Usually one out of 150 or so are selected. So
what do they call that? The cert?
The cert, C-E-R-T. That's short for certiorari, the petition of certiorari. And so the attorney, John Bursch, who is from Michigan, did a wonderful straightforward breakdown of the case, and then we went into these rapid-fire three-minute comments from leaders all over the country, and they were all coming from their own perspective. That that broadcast is available without any charge on our homepage. The listeners would simply go to www.prolifepartnersfoundation.org, and it's right on the homepage. You can listen to it, and it's calibrated, so if you wanted to jump to a particular speaker, you could do that. It's a wonderful broadcast.
Oh, wow, that's great. And I assume what you meant by David's skills on conducting webinars, he has more skills than just telling people know when to mute their microphone and unmute their microphone.
Yes, exactly. David and I serve as the co-host, and you'll quickly recognize David's broadcasting abilities when you start watching the show.
Oh, good. Most of us who are amateurs with Zoom encounter the mute problem quite often.
Exactly, for sure. Yeah, no, it was a seamless presentation that really the feedback we have received from all across the country has really simply said, wow, what an experience.
Yeah. Were any of those 40 people somebody from Chicagoland, where our listeners hail from here?
Yes. You know, we had a Pro-Life Action League was represented by the son of the great pro-life
Joe
leader,
Scheidler.
Joe Scheidler. Exactly.
Eric Scheidler.
Yes, and he gave a fantastic presentation. Eric was just remarkable.
Yeah. His father, Joe Scheidler, so many of us here in Chicago know so well. Good. I'm trying to, I want to share some kind of thought with the people since that that beautiful feast of the Sacred Heart of Jesus, that welcome, that overturn. There was, on the one hand, all the threats and the screaming, the anger that we saw. I was saddened by most of the news reports that led with, like, Joe Biden's comments, oh, this is a tragic change, these radical fundamentalists. Instead of a news report leading with perhaps a welcome sign for greater debate, greater discussion, greater understanding of the moral issues involved. You're not going to get that from most news items. The thing that I shared with my people was, this reminds me a lot of the compromises in the United States that happened before the American Civil War.
That's right.
It really was there was the 1820 Compromise, there was the Missouri Compromise, there was... So, in a very real sense, what we got at the end of June was what Stephen Douglas was pushing when he was debating with Abraham Lincoln. In other words, if people remember their history, Stephen Douglas was trying to avoid civil war by saying, let the states decide. So that's really what...
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And that's what led Lincoln, as your book so well points out, to jump back into politics. He realized this will be the end of our nation if we allow states to decide the fate of a segment of our population, whether to be free or slave.
Yeah, indeed. So it's certainly a welcome... point in history, but it does.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Yeah, it is brain wrinkling. Thank you, Nick, for that. Mike, you might hear a little clip every now and then that our wonderful tech man, the board man, Nick, throws at us every now and then.
Yeah, it's a nice change-up.
Right. Can I begin with, maybe you saw, this is just hot off the press. I don't know if it came out yesterday or today, but Archbishop Listecki from Milwaukee sent out a beautiful letter that it's only one page. I think it would be good for us to read. You can comment on it or bring in some other thoughts from that webinar that were shared.
Sure.
Have you heard? You probably know of Archbishop Listecki.
I know of him, but I have not seen the letter. I'd be delighted to hear it.
Yeah, for those who may not know him, he's a Chicago priest. He's a bishop now, of course. He was a South Side of Chicago kind of guy. He's a Sox fan, I must say. Well, now he's a Brewers fan. You know, actually, the way the Cubs have been going, I'm tempted to put on a Brewers hat since, anyways, a lot of us Illinoisans enjoy our escapes to Wisconsin, as we call them. But anyways, Bishop Listecki was a professor in the seminary when I was back in the seminary back in the 1980s, and his moral classes, moral theology and moral principles were very formative in my life, and he was able to make the controversial points that so many times we avoid, and so many times even in the church are avoided. We certainly don't want to argue too much about moral philosophy around the dinner table with our family and friends, but when we do get to discussing and understanding moral principles, there should be a deeper dive, as it were. And that's what Bishop Listecki, I think, is the gist of his letter here. Well, let me share, and then I think, Nick, you can take us into a break, and then we'll come back. We can, Mike, I'd appreciate your thoughts on what he's saying here. So
sure.
He begins, he calls it more on the culture war. Dear brothers and sisters in Christ, he says, I have long held that we have been involved in a culture war for decades. This is a necessity on the part of the secular society. Now, there is a necessity on the part of secular society to demean the influence of the church and the church's teachings. This is attempted by secular teachings that characterize the church's teachings as out of date. These ideologies rely upon science when it fits the narrative, but often it is merely a dependency on the emotional presentation of the issues. The worship that the church engages in every Sunday is tolerated, but the voice of the church is often minimized and excluded from the social conversation. For modern secularists, we should feel free to worship for an hour on a Sunday, but then remain silent in expressing our beliefs to the larger society. The beauty of the church's teachings is that they are based on reason and revelation. There is a truth which will win out, but not without a struggle. The modern culture wars have taken its toll not only on the value of human life from conception to natural death, but attacks on traditional marriage between a man and a woman, the family, and the primary role of parents in relationship to the raising of their children, and in a subtle way, the impact on religious liberty, the very first freedom. We can trace various moments that demand a surrender or accommodation of the church's teachings, insist that the church's teachings are no longer relevant to a modern society. the consistent teachings of the church always embody a prophetic aspect to its presentation. I am old enough to remember the controversy surrounding the teaching on quote-unquote birth control. There were angers and defiance over what some held to be an invasion of the church and the sexual privacy of couples. St. Paul VI bravely proclaimed that one should never separate sexual relations from procreation. Prophetically, he offered that to do so would wreak havoc on the dignity of women, a weakening of the family, an increase in abortions, and the potential for governments to use this as a means to regulate populations. Sexualization of our society has only led to a glorification of the individual without consideration of the consequences to children, family, or personal dignity. This encyclical, Humanae Vitae, on the English translation on human life, on the transmission of human life, was issued July 25th, 1968. We'll be coming up on that anniversary, which happens to be, this is society, didn't write this, that's the Feast of St. James. And since I'm presently living at beautiful St. James, that July 25th date sticks in my mind. Okay, back to Bishop Lestegui. In the United States, the Roe versus Wade decision was issued just 5 years after Humanae Vitae. For 26 years, we have been blessed with the teachings of St. John Paul II, whose works have commented on every aspect of social teachings of the Church, including Humanae Vitae, and expanded in his apostolic exhortation, Familiaris Consortio, the role of the Christian family in the modern world, which was published in 1981. In retrospect, St. John Paul II wrote two encyclicals that he used to form the basis of the Church's moral understanding and teachings, Veritatis Splendor, i.e., the splendor of the truth, in 1993, and Evangelium Vitae, the Gospel of Life, in 1995. Their importance forms a blueprint for consideration of any moral issues. He rejects modern moral methodologies that fail to consider absolutes and the effects of integrating the teachings into one's personal life. In the culture wars that we are currently involved, we need the consistent and strong message of teachings that address the issues without ignoring the truth. It is in truth that we offer the best of how God has fashioned us as his children. Many can be discouraged by the onslaught of cultural attacks on our Catholic teachings, but this is not the first time the Church and its faithful have had to profess the teachings in the face of opposition. It is our mission to proclaim with confidence that the Lord Jesus and his Church is the only one who offers life eternal. Be joyful that we will proclaim the truth, but with love. It will always be the heart joined to the head that gives its teachings its strongest testimony. It was in Antioch that the followers of Jesus were first called Christians, as they said, "See how they love one another." Sincerely, Archbishop Jerome Lestegui, Archbishop of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And that was just published on July 5th of this year, 2022. Very interesting, and I just can't say how beautiful it is that Bishop Lestegui has penned that and shared it out. Let's take our break. And Mike, I'd like to hear your comments and where this might fit in to our whole mission of life. So Nick, we'll take our break here now. I am Father Tom Coy's guest host on The Winds of Change. You are listening to the new EWTN Catholic Radio Voice for Chicagoland, WFSI Catholic Radio, 88.5 FM and AM 750 WNDZ.
Here's some good news. we are pleased to announce that St. Stanislaus Kostka is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in answer to our Blessed Mother's call to open the doors. The Blessed Sacrament will again be exposed all day, every day, except when masses or other services are being held. You are invited to come and pray anytime, day or night. For your safety, we ask that you practice social distancing and wear a mask. Hand sanitizer is available, and St. Stan's has increased cleaning and sanitizing of the church, and a security person will be on site. More information can be found at ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org. St. Stanislaus Kostka is located 2 blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway.
I'm Father Tom Coyes, Winds of Change guest host, and you are listening to the Winds of Change. Ever been to a Civil War reenactment? Booming cannons, rifle volleys, and lots of talk about history. Hi, I'm Father Tom Coyes, and I want to invite you to a Civil War reenactment. Check out historicstjames.org for information. Come to St. James at Sag Bridge in Lamont, Saturday, July 23rd, as Bishop Verroa of Virginia squares off with Bishop Purcell of Cincinnati. You'll be transported back to the 1860s to see two Catholic bishops deliver authentic Civil War era sermons about the War of Northern Aggression. Old Abe himself will be your host. Admission is free, but Lincoln's hat will be passed to help maintain this historic church. Burgers will be available for purchase before the play at 5 p.m. Visit historicstjames.org. See you on the 23rd at 7 p.m. And don't forget to check your musket at the door.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. God bless you. Hope you caught that little ad there for the Civil War reenactment. It's as a lover of history, I just see this is a beautiful time to revisit what Catholics have said in the past. So going back to what the bishop said just a couple days ago, Bishop Listecki, Mike Kenny, with the Pro-Life Catholic Partnership Foundation. Did anything strike you in Bishop Listecki's letter there?
I couldn't write notes fast enough as I was listening to you read that beautiful letter. And by the way, I really like your ad for the event that you have coming up in a couple of weeks. That was very well presented. So I there are at least sort of 3 points I'd like to comment on, if that would be okay.
Yeah.
So early on in the letter, the Archbishop beautifully points out that our Catholic faith is a blend of reason and revelation, and that truth will win out. I think for those of us who are seeking to charitably and persistently build a culture of life, it is so important to remember that truth will win out, and that even though the dominant culture currently controls the messaging, we can't lose sight of the fact that truth will win out, and that's the foundation of our hope and our joy. And we do have reason and revelation on our side. That's the consoling part. The second point I wanted to suggest is really, if you think about it in big picture, sort of humorous, ultimately, and that is this argument that we live in a modern society, and therefore what the church is saying is somehow out of touch. And the Archbishop's letter points out that that argument was used over 50 years ago in 1968. So we're not so modern at that time if 50 years later we're somehow referring to ourselves as modern today. A half century ago, I suppose we weren't modern then in today's mindset. So that's a moving target that is ultimately a rather silly thing for the opposition to life to say that somehow the modern society would change timeless truths. That is clearly not persuasive. And St. Paul VI, Pope Paul VI, was prophetic in Humani Vitae on behalf of life, on human life, when he spoke about the advancement of the contraceptive mindset will undermine the dignity of women, it will weaken the family, and it could possibly even lead to governments coercing people to limit their family size. And it did. It certainly did, right?
Yeah. The thought that runs through my mind so often when we dive into these things is I want to make this clear to any listeners who are struggling or are offended just by this topic, which comes up, you know, quite a bit. As I say, not usually around the dinner table, or and maybe it's not right to argue about it around the dinner table. It's perhaps a lot better to talk about sports or music or something. But anyways, we should not say nothing. You know, we need to say something sometime at certain places. So anyways, sure. That being said, but what I want my listeners to appreciate is people who quote unquote are the pro-lifers are not, how do I want to say this? I'll say we, because I consider myself a pro-lifer. That sometimes I find offensive when a strong Catholic person or someone who goes to church all the time and considers themselves a strong Catholic will use the adjective, you pro-lifers. I don't like.
Yes.
I don't like it when people say you pro-lifers. It should always be we pro-lifers. But what I want to say is that we pro-lifers are not the caricature of the church lady who is just a goody two shoes, holier than thou, never sinned, kind of the self-righteous. What other kind of adjective can I throw at there? So many of us are aware that the rightness of standing up for life comes from sad events in life or regrets and pain, shall we say?
Sure, sure.
And true it is that I guess you could say Jesus would come at the issue from the goody two shoes size. We don't side. We wouldn't say that Jesus would be pro-life because he's a sinner. We say he's not a sinner, and the Holy Spirit, being the third person of the Blessed Trinity, teaching us certainly is laying on us the truth. But a good proportion of pro-lifers are trying to help others come through their wounds or their bad experiences to a different approach, a sense of making the world better by correcting our lives in one way or another. I don't know. Does that?
Yes, that reminds me of an. That reminds me of an expression that my grandmother used to say requires a little bit of pondering, but when observing the world, she would say, "There but for the grace of God go I." In other words, we're not judging the individual person's conduct that has gone astray. We are realizing that we are as susceptible to going astray as anyone else, but for the grace of God. So if we're anchored in that grace, then the third point I wanted to mention about the Archbishop's letter is to say that when he refers to these two magnificent documents, Splendor of Truth and Gospel of Life, as the restating of 2,000 years of Catholic moral theology, I think that is so true that what we are trying to do is represent these timeless, beautiful truths that lead to happiness. The pursuit of happiness is one of those three unalienable rights articulated in the founding of our country, that we want to be a place that represents the freedom to live life to the fullest and And the only way to do that is to ultimately abide in the truth. And so that's why we're pro-life. That's why we're standing for women and preborn children.
Right. You know, that reminds me of the great Fulton Sheehan, when he would give talks at prisons, would often begin by saying something along the lines of, there's only one difference between you and me. You got caught.
Wow, that's a beautiful statement.
Yeah. In other words, he was trying to say he's not the goody two shoes perfect, you know, or I'm going to address my words not because I'm coming down on you, but I recognize. And they, in humility, would have to confront themselves with the darn that I did get caught. And a lot of other people that did the same thing we did didn't get caught. And so that's why we're in jail. And yeah. Anyways, I just think that that's so important for people to realize, those who are upset or angry or turned off by people who are pro-life, they really have a very wrong persona, a wrong attitude about most of the people. We try to help people through something difficult, something bad, as it were. Yeah.
Right.
And
that's
one of the reasons, one of the things I want to say too, so glad Archbishop Listecki penned this note, and is because, unfortunately, bishops are so ambiguous often. The ambiguity of statements, and they try to be neutral on what they would consider political issues, which are political issues, but they are also moral issues.
Right.
But the fact that he's a archbishop is so helpful for us as well, lay people and or common parish priests like myself, because there are a lot of statements by other bishops and cardinals, and I guess you could even say the Pope himself, where there are there's ambiguities that you could drive a truck through.
Right, that's right.
And so I'm grateful.
Well, I think
that
I would say that it's really important for all of us to be praying for our bishops, archbishops, our priests, because as a layperson, I'm very much comforted by the titles that you have. So a bishop or archbishop is considered a shepherd of the church. That's a big responsibility, a person who is protecting our huge population against these wolves of deceit and wolves of sin, and the archbishop has this responsibility to speak clearly. As it relates to your role, Father, as a priest, I very much am grateful that we refer to you as Father. It's difficult to be a father. You have to guide and correct and steer and listen, and but that's your job. You know, it's not to be a friend. It's not to be a brother. It's to be a father.
And it does hurt when we're told that we're offensive. I don't like to be offensive.
That's
and
right.
That is such a common criticism. I was offended by what you said, and I really don't want to be offensive, but some things, so often when I hear that said about something I've said, I just can't help but think that it says more about them than it does me.
It's so much the case that as a biological father, I have the privilege of being a father, that our job is to present the truth. And, you know, sometimes the messenger is the sort of the victim of the response, as opposed to really the listener embracing the message and considering the message. So thank you for being courageous and being such a great father. And it's so encouraging to see bishops who remind us of the timeless truths of the Catholic faith.
Indeed, indeed. I think, Nick, we can take our second break, but I do want to, I want to share one of the more difficult passages that I did, a quote that I included in my book, The Ashes That Still Remain, maybe if you remember. It's toward the end of the book, where I tackle some of the very, very powerful, very significant thoughts that the Southerners shared after the Civil War, after the battles, after they had to accept the defeat. There was a battle for thought. There was a battle for ideology. There was a battle for philosophy, and I'm going to share one of those quotes from Alexander Stevens, who was the vice president in the Confederacy, because it is so relevant for what we're facing right now as well.
I remember that passage and highlighted it and checked it because it's very powerful. So please read it.
It's so powerful, yeah. So, Nick, let's take our second break here. I am Father Tom Coy's guest host on The Winds of Change. You are listening to the new EWTN Catholic Radio Voice for Chicagoland, WFSI Catholic Radio, 88.5 FM, and AM 750 WNDZ.
Here's something that you should know about what's happening at St. Stan's. The Daughters of St. Mary of Providence Religious Order operates the Providence Soup Kitchen on the premises of St. Stanislaus Kostka Parish. The Soup Kitchen serves a midday meal Monday through Thursday from 11:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Anyone who needs a meal is welcome. If you can volunteer to help and serve meals on a regular basis, please call Sister Darlene at 773-870-2435. That's 773-870-2435. St. Stan's is located two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. Here's some good news. We are pleased to announce that St. Stanislaus Kostka is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in answer to our Blessed Mother's call to open the door.
I'm Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and you are listening to
The Winds of Change. St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy. St. Stan's is an exceptional private elementary school in Chicago, serving preschool, age 3 and 4, pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, and first grades. We incorporate Catholic values and rigorous academic social-emotional learning, Chinese, Spanish, STEM, and more, providing our students with leadership and life skills to transform our world. St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy is conveniently located one block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. To schedule your tour, visit ststanschicago.org. ststanschicago.org.
Hey, welcome back. Father Tom Coys with you again on a brain wrinkling Wednesday. And we have with us Mike Kenny of the Pro-Life Partnership Foundation, great legal mind and lover of God's little children and all sorts of wonderful things of truth and justice. So I promised before the break of sharing, Mike, you say you remember this quote from Alexander Stevens. Can you set the stage for our listeners?
I highly recommend to your listeners Ashes That Still Remain. Your book is unlike anything I've ever seen, and I think it's very important that our schools be utilizing it. I just attended a conference where they asked for prospective speakers and authors, and I put your name in there, hoping that they'll invite you next year to give a lecture on it. So it's that good. So please correct me if I'm wrong, but as I remember the passage, it was clear that the war had ended in terms of the battlefield, but the acceptance of the results was very difficult, and so much so that some of the leaders of the South indicated that they would never give up their ideology and their beliefs, in this case, their belief that somehow they had the right to control another person's liberty. And I don't remember the passage in terms of word for word, but it just struck me that this person, this Alexander Stevens, was just consumed with, unfortunately, you know, hatred and the kinds of things that lead us in a terribly wrong direction, and that even diffuse the ability to process truth. And so I believe it was a statement to the effect that he was going to hold on to this wrong thinking, despite
right.
Yeah,
and there's two aspects. One is the wrong thinking that the black person is inferior. The other thing that is more challenging and is more, it's much more of, we're in the weeds of ideology and legalese and right government and all that. This comes on, I shared the one quote from Alexander Stevens, where he does say the Confederacy was unique in the history of the world because we founded the Confederacy on the cornerstone of the great truth that the Negro is not equal to the white man, that slavery, subordination to the superior race, is his natural and normal condition.
Yeah, you know, it doesn't get much worse than that, does it?
And clear, you know, and that's he's at least doing us the favor of what do you say, sharing his mind,
right? Being candid, yeah.
Removing any ambiguities, you know,
correct.
That. Okay, but here's the next issue that is not so clear for us today. I think, if you took a survey of Americans today, you know, 100%, or at least 99%, there may be some white supremacists that would disagree with that first end. But this is where he's getting into the quagmire of what we face in terms of the United States as a collection of states that shouldn't be controlled absolutely by Washington. Now, I buy into that thought. You know, I like the idea of the 50 states of the United States as being experiments in the Republic, or experiments in political science or what have you. Here's what he says. He says, some of the strongest anti-slavery men, the abolitionists, who ever lived were on the side of those who opposed the North and their centralization principle, which led to the war. The war was a conflict between the principles of federation on the one side and centralism or consolidation on the other. The Federalists, i.e. the Southerners, opposed the Emancipation Proclamation because they saw it as a first step in many future measures. Their opposition to the Emancipation Proclamation, or kindred subsequent proclamations, spring from no attachment to slavery, but as Thomas Jefferson or Pinckney's or Clay's opposition, from their strong convictions that the federal government has no rightful or constitutional control or jurisdiction over such questions, and that no such action as that proposed upon them could be taken by Congress without destroying the elementary and vital principles upon which the government was founded. It was not a contest between the advocates or opponents of that peculiar institution, but a contest between the supporters of a strictly federative government on the one side and a thoroughly national one on the other. So, end quote. I just think that's so, it's hard to unpack.
Yeah, but you know, there is a two-word answer to that, I think, that clarifies, and that's either you can refer to it as unalienable rights or inalienable rights. The Declaration uses one, and we commonly today refer to as inalienable rights, and so this is what that statement is missing, that yes, in general, we want subsidiarity to be part of our government structure, the idea that those government entities closest to the geographic region that they are sovereign over would have autonomy to proceed in a way that's in the best interests of that population, the geographic conditions, the circumstances, and that we're connected in a federation. But there are inalienable rights that run through the entire experience, the entire republic, that are not dependent upon majority vote. They're not dependent upon a state or local government recognizing those rights. They are independent of that because they are timeless truths that associate with each person made in the image and likeness of God. It's not coming from the government. It's a present, pre-existing condition. And that's the trick of some of these statements that sound kind of right, but if you forget something as important as an inalienable right, you're missing the big picture.
Yeah. The fact that Alexander Stevens points to Thomas Jefferson and Henry Clay from Kentucky, those kind of guys who were against the Northern aggression and didn't like slavery, though they, Thomas Jefferson didn't free his slaves until after he died, Clay from Kentucky was very reticent to attack the institution, though he didn't like it, but he wouldn't attack it. So similar to a political person today who says, I don't like abortion, but I'm not going to legislate on it. I'm just going to let it be, as it were. So in some ways, the way Scalia wrote the Dobbs decision, here's what I'm going to say. It sounds like Alexander Stevens in this case.
That's right.
That they left out what you just pointed out, namely that they didn't say the child has an inalienable right to life.
That's right. Interesting, but, Father. You just referenced Scalia as writing it, which is interesting because that was Scalia's position. But I think you meant Justice Alito's opinion.
Oh right. In this one, yeah.
Alito. But Scalia often, I think, unfortunately, with as many wonderful attributes, Justice Scalia didn't have that issue right. He thought somehow that you couldn't protect the preborn child through the Constitution. That's just incorrect analysis. And I think Justice Alito wrote a wonderful opinion in terms of demonstrating that clearly abortion is not a constitutional right. It's not either directly or implicitly in the Constitution. That was great. But he failed to take the next step, which is to say that all human beings are equally protected under our Constitution.
Right. Well, and I'll throw the idea out that I put into my book, that the ashes that still remain, that you so kindly promoted there, is that I was kind of defending Lincoln in the sense that he was willing to go slowly and take step by step. And I'm willing to approach this issue slowly enough, step by step.
Yes, I see the wisdom in that.
There is wisdom in step by step. You're changing a huge cause. The only trouble is, how long will it take, and how many lives are it? You know, you could see the wisdom of fighting a war in a certain sense. You can't just march into the enemy and hope to win right away. But how many lives are you willing to lose? And that's reminiscent of Lincoln's spirit or Lincoln's words when he said, if God wills this war to continue until every drop of blood spilled on the battlefield, you know, will equal the blood of the blood spilled by the whip of the lash, you know,
that's right.
against the slave.
Right.
You know, how long are you willing to wait? Interesting enough, too, let me connect it to the Civil War play that we're doing here at St. James. The bishop from the north, Purcell, one of his main arguments is, he says, well, yes, some people say that the South will eventually change its mind on its own, and that would be a better way to adjudicate the situation. He uses the biblical example of Ephraim from the Old Testament, Ephraim being one of the smallest and youngest of the tribes of Israel, was quick to abandon faithfulness to the Ten Commandments and the laws of God through Yahweh, and they were combining their Jewish life with the pagan lives and pagan worship of the old. So anyways, there's a line in the Bible that says, just let him alone and he'll change. He'll correct himself. And I think it's on Alexander Stevenson's part, it's a fantasy in the sense that he was saying some of the greatest opponents of slavery were on the side of the Confederacy.
Right.
And they even said, well, we would have changed. We would have eliminated slavery if you didn't start this war.
Right.
And
right.
You got to say, really?
I'm glad you made that connection, and it reminds me of in our current situation where those advancing abortion literally refer to abortion as health care. When you're ending the life of a person, that's not health care.
Well, that's a good point, which means they're not going to do away with health care because health care is a good.
That's right. Yeah.
And you don't want to do away with health care.
Right.
That would be ridiculous. You know what, the little time we have left here, oh my goodness. Do we have another break? I think we have another break we haven't got to. Nick, is that right? Let's take our third break, and then I'll come back. I was reading G.K. Chesterton's book on his conversion to Catholicism, and he speaks about how Catholicism is looked at as the old religion, which is kind of an old relic that you don't consult for fresh meaning in the world of your contemporary world. And he has a good point that I think would be good to share with our listeners. So anyways, I'm Father Tom Coyes, a guest host on The Winds of Change. You are listening to the new EWTN Catholic Radio Voice for Chicagoland. We are WFSI Catholic Radio on 88.5 FM and on AM 750 WNDZ. Ever been to a Civil War reenactment? Booming cannons, rifle volleys, and lots of talk about history. Hi, I'm Father Tom Coyes, and I want to invite you to a Civil War reenactment. Check out historicstjames.org for information. Come to St. James at Sag Bridge in Lamont, Saturday, July 23rd, as Bishop Verroe of Virginia squares off with Bishop Purcell of Cincinnati. You'll be transported back to the 1860s to see two Catholic bishops deliver authentic Civil War era sermons about the War of Northern Aggression. Old Abe himself will be your host. Admission is free, but Lincoln's hat will be passed to help maintain this historic church. Burgers will be available for purchase before the play at 5 p.m. Visit historicstjames.org. See you on the 23rd at 7 p.m. And don't forget to check your musket at the door.
Thank you. I'm Father Tom Coyes, Winds of Change guest host, and you are listening to the Winds of Change.
All these years, you've been enjoying Winds of Change, Monday through Friday, on AM 750 WNDZ. And then, on Friday, you have to wait 2 days to hear Winds of Change? But take heart! Because now you can hear Winds of Change on Catholic Radio 88.5 FM WFSI for Northern Chicagoland. That's Saturday mornings at 10, except on first Saturdays. Now, don't you feel better?
Hey, welcome back, everyone. With just a little bit of time left here, this is worth a whole new show, but C.K. Chesterton, as you know, many of my listeners know, is one of my favorite writers. He has this to say as he's referring to his conversion to Catholicism. He says, it would be very undesirable that modern men should accept Catholicism merely as a novelty, but it is a novelty. It does act upon its existing environment with the peculiar force that and freshness of a novelty. To unpack that a little bit, is novelties, is Chesterton is using the word novelties kind of in the sense of, you know, when you buy a trinket. If you're on vacation, you know, you often like to get a souvenir, right? A lot of times you buy a trinket as a souvenir. They're kind of novelties, or sometimes there appears in the marketplace a novelty. First thing that comes to my mind is a pet rock. Remember when pet rocks were a novelty?
Yes.
I did not get one, but now I think people have pet dogs instead of children, but Chesterton is saying people will look at Catholicism. They called it the old religion. They know it's the religion that goes back 2,000 years, but they want a new religion. And there is a sense of, I'll only go to the contemporary liturgy. You know, I like the Mass. That's the contemporary Mass, because it has the sense of its newness is what is needed for today. And Chesterton, in his conversion, realized that what is needed for today is a kind of a timeless wisdom that's not a kind of novelty like a pet rock. It's a novelty kind of like a heirloom that you might discover. And what came to my mind is that I like contemporary music in many different ways, and I like contemporary masses in a lot of ways. But what I find energizing about Catholicism, and especially the Catholic Mass, is that it makes it feel like you're touching something old that's ever new. And it reminded me of when you're preparing those posters that we use at wakes these days, you know, when someone dies, and we always have to have a lot of photographs, right? My precious dear mother just had 95th birthday, so we had posters with pictures. When you open that box that has the old pictures, there's a reverence that hits you. That's, I think, part of what Catholicism does for me. Mike Kenney, thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening,
thank you,
my
Father.
Friends. We'll have you back again. I'm
thank
Father
you.
Tom Coyes. You've been listening to The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and WSFI 88.5.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Meaningless thought, the shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred, the time is now.